Here's a man who you might not know lives without a pinky toe. Most feet have 5 digits, but his left had only 4, which made him ever so slightly unbalanced when he'd stand on the floor. Now, he often felt the most unbearable itch, the twitchiest, itchiest itch you might scratch, right from where his little toe should attach. It began on a Sunday at 3:15. He was having his toast with chamomile tea, when up from his foot a feeling arose, an itch from his missing littlest toe. Over the next several days, he acted quite strange. It was easy to tell his demeanor had changed. Hushed voices whispered from colleagues and peers that once in the break room, he broke out in tears. His productivity dipped. Executives were concerned. Souvenir Unlimited had a reputation, and they wouldn't get burned. But he made tasteless trinkets for places that he'd not been, and the thought of this now made him crawl on his skin. At the littlest things, he began to lash out. He fought with coworkers, on the subway, and with strangers online. His phantom discomfort filled all of his time. He looked for relief in art, music, and dance. He even began watching experimental cinema from France. He traveled through Poland, Hungary, Uzbekistan. And when he didn't feel better, he tried Egypt, Japan. He bicycled, flew, and traveled by train. But wherever he went, he felt just the same. And so he decided, as he lay awake at night, that who he'd become was not someone he liked. When the clock had tick-tocked towards 2:30, it became exceptionally clear what he needed to do. If his toe itched so badly, it must be the case that he had lost it somewhere in some childhood place. He checked by the bridge, the drugstore, and the train station. But fruitless efforts fed fires to vicious frustration. On Olive Avenue, in a house painted pink, his mother's was the last place of which he could think. This photo was abundant evidence clear that this missing toe truly never was here. Mother smiled gently, assuring her son. His toe was nowhere. He was born without one. He was surrounded by love that he failed to see, because all he was thinking was me, 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 me. With good all around him, it's his job to engage, but this he neglected when he chose to feel rage. His issue was something that he could not choose. But after all, who doesn't mind some extra space in their shoes?
So the interesting bit, the tidbit that I warned you about ahead of time, the interesting tidbit about this film is that today's presenter for our BIOS feature is the one who scored all the music, all the sound effects, those catchy little bings, and all the music in it. Paul Carden, some of you might recognize him as a sound engineer here, our audio engineer, our production manager. He has this other alter ego where he makes award-winning scores for animated films. And so he is going to talk to us a bit about his journey, his creative endeavors today, and I'm excited to hear Paul Cardin, so welcome him to the stage now.
Hello. Whoa, okay. If you can switch me over, because I'm going to show some stuff off right off the bat. A little bit of pinky toe. Let me hop over here. Hey, there it is. So this is Ableton. This is what I use right now. And this is the intro of the film, so I can bring up the video. This is an old version of it that was just frames before we got everything together. If you can turn that up. So this is like storyboard frames. The whole film hasn't been animated yet. I'm working on building all of this up alongside his production. And the film kind of revolves around this theme of up and down, because this guy's going through the struggle throughout it. He can't, where's my pedal? There's my pedal. He's going through the struggle of up and down. He can't figure out his place in life and he's frustrated, so it's wrong key. Repeating, and then there's and that's also repeating, so everything kind of builds off of that theme of like this back and forth between positive and negative. He can't find his place. And this soundtrack specifically was all done on this computer, actually, all on the computer. So I have all of the instruments, I can play them right here. Here's an oboe. The clarinet, the main theme. It's actually up higher. So I can't get as amazing of a performance out of here as like Ken did earlier, but there's a lot of really cool stuff that I can get out of it. And it's a great barrier of entry for someone like me who at the beginning could not afford to bring on instrumentalists and stuff, people to play parts for me, so it's been amazing. As an entry into this world, I'm starting to hire a lot more instrumentalists now, and it's really cool, though. So I'm going to load up a new project, and while I'm doing that, I'm going to talk about some other stuff. One second. Okay, so my name is Paul Cardin, Paul Michael Cardin. Let me pull up a slide here. Hey, there I am. I moved here from Ohio about 3 years ago, started volunteering here a little less than 3 years ago. You probably recognize me as one of the guys who's running along the aisle, setting up mics on stage or sitting up at the board. Kevin and Richard are up there now, but I'm up there pretty often. I do live sound, but I also compose a lot of music for media, so stuff like this. It's something that I'm very new to in life. I've been into music my whole life, but it's only been the past 3 years. I've been writing for film and television and stuff, and it's really, really cool. I also do a good bit of sound design too, so if I start to load up this project real quick. So for example, in Pinky Toe, all of the sounds of him walking around or the train and the bicycle were all sounds that I had to design and make. Animation doesn't come with natural sound you can record on a set like live action, so all of that needs to be created by hand, which is a whole lot of fun. So this is another film I worked on about a child who visits his mom in the hospital. He just came from playing a concert. He has his little outfit on. But he's really sad because his mom's in the hospital, and then his mom starts to tell him this story, and he leaves the hospital room into this story world up in the clouds where there's all these little cloud creatures. And I'll show off a little bit of the sound for this. These kind of wobbly, goofy cloud creatures. So it took me a while to figure out what these clouds would sound like when they move. You know, kind of that wobbly, whoop, 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 whoop. I was thinking Jell-O at first, because just looking at them, I'm like, they look so wobbly, they look like Jell-O. But it turns out Jell-O sounds really, really gross and does not sound like I thought it would. So I actually found someone online recorded all these samples of pieces of plastic wobbling around, and I just downloaded a ton of these little samples and made an instrument that I could play, and I just would play this instrument to the characters moving around and wobbling, and then there's also all these other goofy synth sound effects in here. I'll play a little bit more. All these little pops and like zoop, zoop. You'll hear one here. So yeah, and that euphonium was actually recorded by someone at LSU, so I've made a lot of great contacts with instrumentalists there. I had him play really bad stuff, actually. If I go back here, you can hear just like awful. I think we sat there for 15 minutes and he just kept like farting out these really gross noises. Okay. So let me get back over here and pull this up. Now I'm just gonna talk for a bit. So, it's awesome. I'm only near the start of what I think is gonna be a big journey right now. Going way back, I was born in Provo, Utah. My family, very Mormon at the time. But throughout my life, we quickly moved between Indiana and upstate New York and Ohio and back again and around and stuff. So I didn't really settle anywhere too much. I have four siblings, making five of us in all. I don't know how my parents manage. I've been interested in music my whole life. I started piano lessons when I was about 5 years old and took them for about 10 years, but I was a lot more interested in music production. Oh, here's a picture of my parents looking awesome and my family looking awesome too. That's both awful pictures. When I was about 11 years old, my parents helped me get this piece of music software called Sony Acid Music Studio. It was pretty cruddy, but I made some fun little tunes with it. I mean, cruddy little tunes, but I started learning stuff through that. I started expanding my abilities. I got homeschooled at about, I went into homeschooling in eighth grade, which gave me a lot of time to play video games. I had a computer and I was homeschooled, which is never a good formula. So I played a lot of video games and my grades probably suffered because of that. They did suffer. My parents are watching and they're like, yeah, that wasn't great. But I also got really into technology. One second. I'm getting statuses from Facebook on here. So I got really into technology and I got really into music production. So I'm studying all of this stuff and just learning. I'm on online forums, I'm talking with people online, I'm making friends online, not just with this music stuff, but video games, you know. So spending a lot of time talking to people on the internet. My language is slowly becoming defined by how I communicate through text, which is interesting, not necessarily the best thing, but I made some really meaningful relationships through those years. So I hit about 18 years old, and my dad takes me to this club called Ace of Cups in Columbus, Ohio. We're living in Columbus at the time. And he introduces me to the guy in the back, Nick Schold, who runs the board. He's the live sound guy there, and I shadow him that night. And then I ask, can I come by a few more times? I'm just wanting to learn stuff at this point. And I think about three shadowing sessions in, I'm suddenly his backup guy, which is super cool. Just kind of based on the stuff I'd been learning on the internet up to that point. And I do a lot of really fun shows there. It's a punk and metal and rock club, but I meet some really cool bands there and some surprisingly notable names. So at this point, I want to do more though. I'm really enjoying the music production stuff. Live sound is really cool, but I feel like there's a lot more that I can do. Applications I'm sending to places nearby aren't really going anywhere because I don't have that much experience, not that much training yet, at least not formally. So I do two very big things. Number one, I'm getting close to one of these internet friends. He lives in California. I've flown and visited him a couple times. His dad's a musician. His parents have a spare room upstairs. You get where that's going. Number two, my parents, absolutely hating this idea, request I get some proper schooling in first. So I go to this 7-week, out in the middle of nowhere, on-campus dorm program in the middle of Chillicothe, Ohio, middle of nowhere. called the Recording Workshop, and I spend 7 weeks there. The studios are our classrooms, so I go in the mornings, study in the classrooms, the studios, go home, and repeat, and that happens for 7 weeks. I'm just there, living there, and really cool. I learned a lot of really nerdy stuff there. And then, yeah, I'm off. I kick some butt at school, and I'm given apprehensive permission for my parents to ship myself out to California. And then, nothing. What was I thinking? It's the same exact thing here. My motivation's kind of absent. I kind of goofed off throughout school. I'm waiting for inspiration that never comes. Applications aren't going anywhere. I don't know anyone. My online connections are a little rockier after the 7 weeks in the middle of nowhere. But I also start realizing just how bad my work ethic really is. I knew it was an issue. I'd struggled my whole life. A proper case, proper diagnosis of ADHD did not help, but I thought the big move, the big change would kick my butt into gear. But I was still me. Still Paul. Nearly half a year goes by with almost nothing. Maybe some small production gigs found online, but that's it. They don't pay too well. Depression kind of hits. I'm spiraling a little bit. I don't have a car. I can barely afford my own food. I'm waiting for inspiration that never comes. Motivation is absent. I don't know. I guess this could have been the end of a very anticlimactic story, but fortunately, I had great motivational support in my family. And in my friend Holter, but that kept me floating, but I don't know, I need more, of course. I need personal motivation. I need drive from within. I need to do something with my life. I need to take advantage of everything that I've been learning, but I just need to wait for that moment that I'm feeling it too, but that doesn't work. But two very lucky things happen almost at once. The friend I moved in with, Holter, he's taking a small animation class at Riverside Community College. He's working on a second quarter short film. He needs music and sound effects. I'd had interest in writing music for film for years. I think I saw WALL-E like in 2007, and the Thomas Newman soundtrack totally enthralled me. I was like, wow, this can do so much for a film. I want to be part of that. So yeah, this was my chance. I write his music and design the sound effects and also provide some visual effects for the film too, just because I could, and we win that year's animation showcase at the school. It was a close friend gig, so no pay, but I'm confident this might be something I want to do. other students take notice of me. This is some of the other winners that year. They ask if I might help with their films. Of course I say yes. I take the risk and decide no pay once again, but only for this first round. I'm somewhat confident at this point, but not confident enough that I'm worth being paid. I feel like I have to learn so much more, which is an awful business strategy, by the way. I don't recommend it. Get paid for what you do. It's great. So I work with some of these Riverside Community College kids, and a couple of these guys make a big leap forward. They enroll at the California Institute of Arts up in Santa Clarita, I think Valencia. They enroll at, oh wait, I already said that, otherwise known as CalArts. Now, CalArts is a huge school for animation. There are loads of people from Disney and DreamWorks and Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon that got their start at that school. So these students, to my surprise, come back to me as they start their new projects at CalArts. Every year, the character animation students, they make a film every year, which is, it's insane level of work that a lot of them put into these things. But yeah, they bring me on. I start charging for my work, very modest student rates, but it feels good. The networking begins and it's an explosion of work for me that year. And each year since, I've worked on a bunch of these yearly films, writing music and designing the sound effects. Some of these films even get into CalArts' yearly producer show. It's something that happens on Sunset Boulevard at the Directors Guild of America, and it's super cool. Here's a picture of the lobby 1 year. Did I say it got into the producer show? It got into the producer show twice. That's 2016. This is 2017. So 2 years in a row, these films that I work on get into these big events. So I'm meeting with industry people and super, super cool stuff. As I make more connections, as my filmmakers make more connections, I make more connections. I've composed music for a great number of short films now, and I'm forming friendships and relationships with people in the animation industry. I got to do a bit of ad work for Disney XD, one of Disney's premium TV stations, and I'm working on some video game projects with some rad guys in the UK, and then along the side is just a chunk of my appears on list on Vimeo. So yeah, this is cool, but there's still this constant battle kind of in the back of all of this, and so many things that I know I could be doing better, motivation and work ethic. In that moment when I moved to California and I was just kind of like in this bad spot and I didn't know what I was doing, and I started to realize that motivation and inspiration, it's not something you have the luxury to wait for. I mean, like, inspiration is honestly all around us, but it's entirely up to us to build from it. The world is full of wonder, but to push and tug and grind and find it along the way, it's not something you can wait for to hit you in, like, these big moments. It's easy to think of creativity as this oddball process of pure inspiration. Really, it's more often a lot of hard work. Creativity aside, there's a lot of knowledge and technicality and ability that goes into my narrow field. Forget the musical writing. It's been years of trial and error learning these tools and programs and standards. So even when you're in those deep blocks, you can keep plugging. You keep pushing, because if absolutely nothing like creatively sound comes out of it, you can still become better at your craft, more fluent, pick up new skills, develop new ways to communicate an idea, develop new ways to communicate with others along the way. That's something that's been hard after being homeschooled, is figuring out how to talk to people and communicate with directors. So, if I didn't push along and make a lot of bad music at first, and even some bad product at first, wouldn't have learned so much every step of the way, trying to wait for that inspiration. I don't really know how to end this, so Austin is going to come back up, and we'll have a little bit of back and forth.
So I would imagine that you all, like I myself, after hearing some of Paul's story, have a lot of questions about what he does. So I have just a couple questions for Paul. Why do you love sound design? Why do you love composing? Why do you do this thing?
So I have something prepared for you, actually. This is so convenient. Sorry, I've been so down on my phone this whole time. I'd be off in the weeds without this thing. It's been amazing to be a part of the process of like building stories, building worlds. Animation is particularly exciting because, like I said earlier, we're building these worlds of music and sound all from the ground up, almost out of thin air. Animation does not come with pre-baked sound effects and things from the set that you can record. So to build all of this stuff up by hand, it's up to the sound designer to build the auditory world from the ground up. How did the environment sound? What sound does a moving, wiggling cloud generate? And most importantly, how do these textures, these feelings the sound designer invokes, how do they facilitate the story? Like, that's the key of it, story, and music is a lot of the same way, is you're either supporting something that's already there, you need to have story for that, or you're adding deeper meaning to a story, and it's a lot of fun to work with these filmmakers, these composers, and talk to them about what they're trying to do, what they're trying to portray, and how I can assist and like make it have more depth. And I don't know, that's super cool.
So what I hear is that an animator is aiming to tell a story, and you partner with them to add layers of richness and depth, and help us interpret the story through things that we may not notice we're taking in. Right? It's easy to realize we see what we see, but then in slips the music and the sound effects, and you help add layers to the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talked briefly about having issues with motivation, and I'm curious to hear you say more about that. What have you learned about your own style of motivation and how you personally work?
So motivation and inspiration for me end up, at least the struggle for it ends up being really closely linked to the topics of ADHD for me, but depression too. I can't say that I know what the answer, I don't have like some sort of remedy for it, but the thing for me that has, and I mentioned it earlier, that helps me move forward with this stuff is just noticing how inspiring the world is around me and how much positivity there is and how much wonder there is to find in anything that you want to look at. And that's been my drive as of late, as I started getting over things after I moved here and was kind of in that bad place, is just the excitement that goes through exploring these things and building from it. And yeah, that's the push that I've had. And also knowing that when I get when these things finish and they're done, they're super cool. And it's super cool to put these things together. So the end goal and also inspiration comes from everywhere.
Yeah.
That's here are my two things.
And just taking the small steps towards getting yourself out of a place where you feel uninspired potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a small step thing that doesn't necessarily make sense when you're in it and is hard to describe. But yeah, it's been a struggle, and I'm still working through it.
Yeah. So you're a familiar face here to a lot of us, and to others you might not be since you're behind the scenes a lot of the time. But a lot of us know your work around here, or at least we enjoy the benefits of your work because we can hear in these settings. But since you're a familiar face, we might assume things about you. We might assume that you're a lifelong Seventh-day Adventist, born and raised in an Adventist hospital and grown on Loma Linda brand veggie food. But volunteering here over these last 3 years, volunteering and then coming alongside and working here, has actually been your first experience, as I understand, with Seventh-day Adventism. So 3 years later, what keeps you here?
Yeah, well, first off, I love Big Franks.
Had you had one before you came here?
I hadn't had one before I came here. That was a new thing. I think it was within the first few weeks, actually, that like Lori like fed us Big Franks. Yeah, she's giving a thumbs up back there. I said there were two big things that happened after that kind of spiral once I moved here. The second one being Lori, you probably know the family that I moved in with, Jim and Lori Lorbeer and their son Holter Lorbeer. Lori has been part of this church for a while. Sorry, I'm talking
a
about
while.
You. You're right there. She's been part of this church for a while. She sings in the choir. She works at the Southeastern California Conference. She saw a flyer at work that said audio visual volunteers needed for the church, and Lori was like, hey, Paul does that, and then she gave it to me, and I was like, I'm not doing anything. All right, this was before the animation stuff picked up, so I needed stuff to do, keep my skills fresh, I guess. And but at this point, I've been here almost 3 years. I'm a live sound engineer and production manager at the church, and I plan to be here for a while longer. There's... There's a lot. At first, I was, unsure about it. There's aspects of organized religion that I don't know about. Like, I'm on a journey myself. I don't know where I'm at with a lot of this, but here, especially being close to the pastors, working throughout the team and stuff, there's a lot of positivity and a lot of thoughtfulness and insightfulness, kind of this search for knowledge and search for understanding that I think is very positive and very fulfilling. And also just all of the outreach and stuff that you guys do. And there's a lot of bridges that are being built that maybe I might not see in some other places. And I'm really excited to be a part of what everybody does here. And that was the fuel that actually got me to accept this in the first place, besides the week of buttering up you guys did to me.
Fair enough. I can't think of a witty comeback for that one, except for weird ones that end up in butter. So we'll stay away from that.
Yeah, that's probably good.
So final question. I hear that you've recently gotten news about being in the running for an award upcoming.
Yeah, Pinky Toe actually, as of like 4 or 5 days ago, I can't remember when we got news, is one of the semi-finalists in the Student Academy Awards. We don't know exactly what that means yet, but... That's Yeah, there was like out of like 1,600 submissions, and we're in the top 5%. It's weird, but it's super cool. That's a train that I'm still on right now. Like,
awesome. Well, we will keep our fingers crossed you.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Oh, dude. Thank you.
Do I need to do anything with those? This can all just do its thing there? Okay, I'll stay away from it.
They might switch over.
It seems fitting now to talk about the Apostle Paul, right? I heard a groan or two. Thank you, those that chuckled, but if that was too cheesy, I felt it too. But seriously, the Apostle Paul. I think that were he alive today, I think he would challenge us to broaden our definition and our concept of what is spiritual, what is sacred. I personally am afraid that sometimes our definition is a bit too small, and we'd be better off if we tweaked our definition just a little bit. In Acts chapter 17, we find the Apostle Paul meeting with some humanistic philosophers, and he is seeking to convey this passion that he has for his God, this God who he has this dynamic, life-giving relationship with. And how does he do it? How can you meet these folks that he's encountered here up on Mars Hill, meet them where they're at, and try and engage them in such a way as to paint this picture for them? He grabs poetry. And not just any poetry, he grabs poetry from the poet Erratus. Erratus starts with an A, Erratus. And he takes from a poem about Zeus, of all things. He takes from a poem about Zeus, and he applies it to the God that he knows. And this famous line, that if you've been in youth Sabbath school more than like 5 or 6 times, you've probably heard me reference, because I think it paints such a beautiful picture. He grabs this line from this poem and says, "Let me tell you about this God who you do not know. This God is the creator, and in him we live and move and have our being." And I think what Paul is doing here, the apostle one, not Cardin, although Paul Cardin also made this statement that inspiration is everywhere. It is in all and through all. Paul, in other places in the New Testament, in Ephesians, used this language. He said, "This is the God, the creator, who is in all and through all, living in all." And I think what Paul is doing here is challenging us to broaden our perspective just a little bit. We call God by many names, don't we? We use many metaphors, and we compare God to many things. We say God is love. We could probably call God the giver of joy, the instiller of peace. We call God a shepherd. We have many different images and names, and I would posit one more name. I wonder if we could call God inspiration, capital I, and then hear Paul's words just a little bit differently. In inspiration, we live and move and have our being. Paul did the unthinkable and took this poetry from a foreign religion, and he said, "Inspiration is here too." And Paul Cardin, this Paul, not the Apostle Paul, Paul Cardin finds himself at times struggling with where the next glimpse of inspiration will come from. Now, we've probably all experienced a similar thing. Some days, inspiration comes knocking, and all we have to do is open the door and let inspiration come in. Some days, inspiration beckons us to follow, and we get to go on this playful journey of following and chasing wherever inspiration leads us. But then there are other days, gloomier days, where inspiration doesn't seem to be anywhere around, right? Where we don't know where inspiration is going to come from next. Things seem dark. We feel uncreative. We might feel unworthy. But I hear Paul saying, this Paul, as well as the Apostle Paul, saying that inspiration, capital I, is everywhere, even when we don't see it, even when we don't feel it. And sometimes it's all that we can do, but we must do it Take the small step. Create something good, even in a small way. Now, the truth is, we're all creative, right? If we were to pass the mic around, a lot of you would say, I'm not creative, not me, because you're thinking of creativity in the sense of painting, making music, doing the wizardry that Paul does up here. But you and I are creative by nature, if for no other reason than we are alive and we are creating a life. We are always creating something, whether it be relationships, whether it be moments with loved ones, whether it be welcoming atmospheres for customers, classmates, or friends. But there's also the opposite opportunity, isn't there? There's the opportunity to create unwelcoming environments. We might find ourselves creating spreadsheets or lesson plans. We might find ourselves creating redemptive moments or chaos, right? We have the opportunity. We can choose, but we are always creating something. I hear Paul, this one, saying that even in the fog, in the darkness, we have to take a baby step sometimes. Move an inch. Say a word. Start a conversation. Write the first line. And it's hard work. But this is where we start to claim the reality, that inspiration, that God is hiding in all and through all, even when we don't see God's face. And we get to partner with this creator even when we don't see or feel this creator. Now back to our concept of spirituality and what it could look like, maybe a more helpful definition. I would say, and I've been enlivened by these words from the interviewer, the NPR interviewer, Krista Tippett, that anything that nourishes the human spirit, what if we called that spirituality? And if we called that spirituality anything that nourishes the human spirit and enlivens, emboldens, expands the human soul, if that were to be true, then it would be our divine sacred task, our sacred task of finding the ways in which we can create more space in our own lives for the things that nourish our God-given souls, our God-given spirits. And then our most vibrant acts of service would be finding the ways that we can create space for others to encounter the same inspiration, the same God that we experience. This would be our most vibrant gift, our most vibrant act of service to give to the world. I have no idea how Paul does what he does. If you could see the layers of stuff, it was probably a bit small on the screen, but on this screen we had an up-close look, and he had like 32 different instruments that he had going in their own intricate little pathways. I have no idea what goes into what he does. But in conversation with him about his creative process, there is a common denominator, and I get just what he's talking about. I don't understand how he expresses his creativity, how he does it, but our common denominator is this, that when he talks about creating worlds with sound, when he talks about what lights him up through this creative process, I get that. My creative process and your creative process might be different. It might look totally different. It might not be music or painting or drawing or what have you, but we all probably recognize that same feeling of lighting up at the joy of creating. I have a friend, Cambria Spire, who is an occupational therapist, and if you're in college right now and you're wondering what to do with your life, if you're not sure, it might be a little dangerous to talk to Cambria, because by the end of the conversation, she will convince you that occupational therapy is right for you. And in one of these moments where she was trying to convince me that occupational therapy was what I needed to do with my life, she corrected my understanding of the word occupation. I used to think it was just how you earned your money, but she helped me understand that occupation is whatever you do that's required of you at the stage of life that you're in. Wherever you find yourself, your occupation is what you should be doing. So if you're a kid, your occupation is being a kid. It's playing, it's making friends, it's going to school and trying to sit still. It's doing whatever is required of you at this age. Or if you're a parent, it might be the 9 to 5 and then a million more hours of the work week because you got to go pick the kids up from school, bring them home, make sure they brush their teeth, make sure they shower, make sure they're getting their breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and the laundry list goes on. Your occupation is so much more than just how you earn your money. It's what you find yourself doing at the stage of life. Some of the things we choose to do because we want to, some of the things we do because we feel we ought to, because we're told that we ought to do those things. Some of these things we do because people depend on us to do them. Your occupation is all the things that you find yourself doing. And so my question today is, whatever our occupation is, how can we bring this creative energy, how can we partner with inspiration, capital I, to bring a gift through our own individual occupations? I had a conversation with a parent this week who helped me understand parenting in a little different way. I currently have zero concept because I haven't reached that stage in life. So they helped me understand a little bit. They told me that they look at parenting as a work of art. It requires creativity out of you all the time. But there are some days when you're just tired, right? There are some days when the same issue happens and you respond to it the same way that you did yesterday, even though it didn't work then either. You don't choose the creative route. And sometimes you know that and you feel guilty and you feel down about yourself and you feel like you're the worst parent in the world and you're still going to choose the uncreative route because that's all you can see at this moment when all the chaos in the household is happening. But they helped me understand this occupation in a bit of a different way. Anything that we find ourselves doing, there is this opportunity to open ourselves up to the inspiration that might be knocking or beckoning that we follow or may not be anywhere visible or tangible, and we just have to take that first step, have that conversation, say those words, write the first line, whatever it is. This prayer that we always end our gatherings together, our worship gatherings with, I believe is a prayer, is a request for creative energy. It's a request for creative vision. This prayer, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done," is really a prayer. God, here we are, your people. We want to join you in the creative process of blessing this world that you love. May your kingdom become a reality through us. Give us this day our daily bread. May we not look at the world as a place of scarcity, but may we look through the lens of abundance as we are in relationship with a creator that has plenty to go around. Forgive us our debts as we forgive those who owe to us. Or we might know a different translation. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. May we have the creative inspiration to seek the most redemptive route possible instead of just the easiest route, which is often an angry response. May we have the trust and imagination to live as if there is enough, as if there is a more redemptive potential out there. So this prayer, as we pray it, let's look at it this way. Let's expand our view of what is spiritual and sacred to include all the things that we find within our occupation, those things that nourish the human soul. And so would you stand with me today as we respond to this call from both Pauls to partner with inspiration and live this creative life that we have the gift and the opportunity of living. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done.